Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. On this episode, Dan and Sean are getting set to hit the fields for planting season.
As long as we got something that's pretty close to our target, that 50-degree mark and sunshine's coming, I think we need to be pulling the trigger.
This podcast is made possible by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Your Indiana corn and soybean checkoff investments are working to find new markets for your crops through international demand, new uses, and research. Learn more about the program working on your behalf at yourcheckoff.org. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
Hey, we're back in Indiana. Grass is starting to green up. You'd expect that after all the rain we got.
Mm-hmm. Daffodils are blooming too.
Yeah, I mean, everything is just starting to, you know, come up out of the ground here, except crops, because those aren't in quite yet. And that's because we did get a boatload of rain across Indiana. Literally, you could put boats across some of it around the state. It's the Purdue Crop Chat. We're here at the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center in West Lafayette, and I'm with Dan Corn Quinn. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric.
And soybean Sean Castile. Hello, Sean.
Howdy, Eric.
Sean decided to bring lunch, but not enough for all of us. You know, here I am, just kind of hungry, coming straight from lunch. Didn't even get lunch. Just kind of working my bones off here and come in, and Sean's just enjoying himself some Chinese food.
Yep.
What kind was it, by the way?
Kung Pao chicken. Got a little spice, a little kick.
Okay. I'm more of an orange chicken guy myself, you know. I can do the walnut shrimp stuff. I mean, that's pretty good. But
alas, you didn't eat anything, and mine was mighty tasty.
Yeah. Not even a fortune cookie.
Well, there's soy sauce packets over there if you like.
Did you read your fortune?
No, I haven't even opened it yet. So
we don't even know what your fortune is.
No, it's going to be a good one, though, I can tell.
Okay. Tall man will grow mini soybeans. I bet that's what it is.
Dry conditions are in your forecast.
Yeah. What is your lucky number this year? Is it 62? Is it 63?
Oh,
is that
well played?
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, I think 5.7 is my lucky number, right? 5.7 million acres of soy and how many corn over there?
5.4.
Yeah. 5.4. Okay.
It is kind of crazy, Dan. I mean, with all this talk this year about how soybean. I mean. Gosh, just look at the market prices right now. Soybeans are, I mean, it's bad. We really thought, you know, all these corn acres that are coming on and
nothing's in the ground yet, so it could change, right?
It could change.
I mean, these are all intentions, right? These are all
the
intentions.
The gap closed a little bit, you know. So the corn acres are up in the state.
They are.
Soybean
up.
Acres are down.
So. They are. But soybeans still on top, so that's all that matters.
King Castile over here. I mean, my goodness. But alas, here we are. We are approaching the middle of April, and planting really has yet. I mean, I'm sure there are some folks with some in the ground here at this point, but probably ill-advised, according to soybean Sean Castile.
Yeah,
at this point.
I got a few text messages last week, and some we did have some nice weather for a short period in March before all the rains really came in. So I mean, some people tickled around, and I think they played, but I mean. It was a legitimate, hey, what do you think? Do you think these beans are going to make it or not? And hypocotyls were discolored. So, yeah, there's not much out in the ground. So, full yield potential is still in the bag.
Absolutely. And at this point, it might be a little while yet before we really get moving because I think it's kind of a tale of two different parts of the state here. In northern Indiana, it was more storm damage, I think, and heavy winds. And yes, we got plenty of rain, that's for sure, but southern Indiana, you go south of Indianapolis, man, we've got flooding, we've got the Ohio River out. I mean, I saw a picture, by the way, on, you know, if we go south of the Indiana border into Kentucky, I saw Old Man River decided to make a stay at the Gold House down there in Louisville. I mean, literally at the entrance to the Gold House, for those folks that have gone down there and maybe stayed for the National Farm Machinery Show, feet up into the Gold House there. I mean, it's bad stuff down there along the Ohio. and we've got the White River out of its banks, and even those not along the river. I mean, 6 to 10 inches of rain. We've got some super soft, moist soil profiles down there. It's going to be a little while before we turn a wheel there, Dan.
Yeah, I'm almost curious of, you know, what, you know, what forces the southern portion of the state impacted this last year, because they've had, you know, you look at even through the winter, right, they got all the snowstorms, right, they had the significant storm, they've had the heavy rainfall, they've had these storm systems go through, and it's often been, you know, we've had rainfall up this way, but not near to the drastic level that the southern portion of the state has been going. But yeah, they're largely heavy saturated conditions. You know, we often expect a lot of the farmers, as you get down, getting close to that Kentucky border, you know, when I was in Kentucky and was down there, it was usually April 1, you know, that's when stuff really started to move down that way. So not much movement at all down there, but, you know, I've had some conversations with some farmers we work with down there. They thought on a lot of there's sandy pockets in parts of, you know, southwest Indiana. They thought, you know, give it a good, you know, 5-7 days coming up that they'd be able to start running in some of those spots. But yeah, it's been pretty wild to see the amount of rainfall and flooding going on in that portion of the state.
And again, folks are really wanting to maybe get started with this soybean crop, Sean. I mean, we've talked about early planting, timely planting. We're starting to get down to the timely time of this.
Well, again, let's put the location of this, right? Timely planting, you know, that name for southern Indiana, yeah, we're getting into that point, right? We had some guys that were planting March 28th last year, but we definitely had warmer conditions, drier conditions last year. Are we late by any means? No. Timely planting, I think, you know, you say by tax day, essentially, is what you just said, Dan, 5 days from now. I think that's still a good timely spot for southern Indiana. I think as you go to central part of the state, I normally think about the 15th, 20th, thereabouts. I like to start pulling the trigger if field conditions are fit here. And so forecast looks pretty decent. I'm still pretty optimistic. Last year, Dan and I were just talking about some of the planting date studies we did here locally. We were able to sneak in. I think sneak in is probably the proper word. And April 22nd last year, Beans ruled that one, by the way. His corn didn't like it. It was still on the touch of a tacky side, maybe. Mm-hmm. But we're not looking too bad. What's interesting with the rains that have come, believe it or not, there was actually a drought monitor map still available for Indiana. We were still popping a D1 or so, I think, up until the last few weeks. And so in this central part of the state, and so I just looked, and you know, it's still there. I think what's going to be interesting, not as bad, but I think what's going to be interesting, these rains hopefully are starting to soak in. So I think, let's think long range, right? They're frustrating late, maybe a little bit now, but if they're slow enough, some of these, not all of them, slow enough to get subsoil moisture, I think that's a good thing. Southern, again, I think they were already fine in terms of overall status, and, you know, straight flooding, that's not good either, right? And you get 6-8 inches of rain in a day or two, that's not soaking in by any means. But I do think that we've got some recharge that's going in, let's say, the northern half of the state, and that's a good thing.
I guess, you know, it's our annual message here of we really have to make sure that we're not getting out there too early and in these unfit conditions and start turning wheels before it's just too early, because that'll stay with you all season long.
Yeah, a lot of people hate the word patience this time of year. You know, I'm the same way with our research trials, right? It's hard to be patient, but you know, from the corn standpoint, right, you know, we always come back to, you know, what do we want out of the corn in terms of emergence and also stand establishment of that crop. And you think about root establishment, right? Big pieces, getting that crop out of the ground quickly and getting it out uniformly. And that's really often tied to the conditions that you're planting into. You look at, you know, soil moisture, but also soil temperatures as well. You know, we're often targeting 115, 120 growing degree days to get that corn emerged and out of the ground. And, you know, we can plant a little bit earlier, but if soils stay cool, that seed just sits there. And, you know, you think about degradation of the seed treatments and how long that's going to provide some protection. So we don't want a scenario where that corn seed is just sitting there for a long period of time. When we have a little bit warmer soil temps, when you're in the 60, 65 degree range of soil temps, we can get that corn out of the ground a lot quicker, and we typically have a lot more success in terms of uniformity of the emergence of that crop. And that's really critical. You know, Sean will continue to give me a hard time on corn, but, you know, we've seen it, you know, even in our own trials, right, that soybeans in many cases just tolerate those kind of crummy conditions, poor emergence. You know, they can tolerate stand losses a lot better. And we saw that, you know, in just our one comparison planting date trial last year. You know, the corn, the first planting date that we had in late April last year was not the highest yielding corn treatment. It was actually the following, I think maybe another 10 days or 2 weeks after, kind of that mid-May or early May, kind of that first week of May time period where that was the highest yielding for corn. So, and I think it really comes back to, you know, what the planting conditions were, the soil temps were good, you know, we got really good emergence, uniformity emergence. But it's just largely setting that plant up for success. That's really the critical aspect when you think about planting, you know, checking depth and checking your equipment and understanding, you know, how the furrow is closing, where the seed is at in the furrow, what are the conditions, you know, are we seeing any mud on the planter as we're going through the field? It's just, I reiterate this message so many times because I get enough calls from farmers saying, my corn looks like crap. Why is that? And it's more often than not tied back to, you know, what the conditions were and what they planted in many cases too wet. So they have compaction, they have root establishment issues, and that stuff just kind of follows you the rest of the season. You know, you have issues with nutrient uptake and you can have issues with lodging and just all these aspects that really can kind of follow you the rest of the year. And it's just so critical to pay attention to the conditions. And, you know, obviously you want to get it in, you know, we're not waiting until June 1st. You want to catch, you know, conditions or, you know, the calendar date as early as you can. But you really, really need to pay attention to those conditions. That's just so critical this time of year.
It's the ghost. It'll haunt you all yes. season long.
Yes.
It's yeah, the ghost.
Yeah, the sins of planting will follow you all season long, yeah. right? No, I think on the soybean front, I mean, I'd like better conditions than sometimes we push them into. Again, mm-hmm. we definitely have the idea that they can tolerate more. I do think they can more than corn. That's from emergence timing, and I think that's from standability. But, I mean, I still want to have a pretty uniform stand. I want to have uniform emergence, but this planting date effect continues to play out, and I just, as long as we got something that's pretty close to our target, that 50 degree mark and sunshine's coming, I think we need to be pulling the trigger. I don't like open seed slots. We can get a buy. I know people probably do more than we should and get timely rains to help it to get through that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, here in the next 10 days, 10 to 14 days, we're probably going to have a lot of beans turning over and getting in the ground. One thing I want to make sure everyone's aware of is to start looking at the seed bags that are coming in. I've wondered about this with some of the seed fill areas we had last year with hot and dry, depending on if you're getting anything out of some of the areas that were more drier, droughty type conditions. We've got some seed lots that are on the lower side. So germ scores for soybeans typically aren't as good as corn, right? Just in general, right? You know, Dan, what do you think is a good germ score on the corn side whenever you have a bag?
Oh, we're often mid-90s and above.
Yeah, yeah. I just dream of the idea to be in a 95% germ yep. on soy. 90s is pretty common and static as far as that's, if we can get there, 90% of our seeds looks good. And I'm getting calls and I'm getting emails and I'm getting some of my own supply that's running 80 to 85%. So, we just need to be aware of it, adjust our seed rates for that, right? So beans can adapt a lot of different plant populations. If we're looking at a planter that's 15, 20 inch, 30, I don't care, just a planter unit, and I'm normally 140,000 seed rate. Well, that's with 90% germ. Well, now if you had 80% germ, you just need to, you know, do the adjustments, right? That's going to put you probably more like 155. 160 if you want to plant the same number of viable seeds. So let's be mindful of that. And then one more thing I want to mention with this in the planting date is if you got these germ lots, these lots that are lower germs, I probably don't want to be planting those first. I think there's probably going to be a little bit of vigor issue. So if you are in more marginal conditions, make sure you're planting the one that's got the germ score. It's a little bit higher, and definitely with the one with the fungicide seed treatment.
I want to go back a little bit to your planting date research that you keep referring to. Can you guys dig a little bit deeper into that from, you know, I know you did it last year. Have you been doing that now for several years, or did you really kick that off last year? I know we've talked about it quite a bit. Can you dig a little bit deeper into that research and talk more about that and what we've found?
Yeah, it started, I mean, really our colleagues over in Ohio State had a fun way of kind of introducing, okay, what should you plant for first, corn or soybeans, and the battle for the belt lengths, what they called.
And we had them on this podcast. Yep. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, so they started in, 2023, I think, their first year they did it. And I've done it over the years prior to this, but that's the first time kind of getting into this. And Dan and I said, yeah, let's play. And so in 24, Dan and I did head-to-head, at least here locally, right? And so, and again, the idea is, okay, we cuss and discuss, okay, which one's better, which ones should be planted first. And from what we're seeing, it's still soybeans first. I think, again, the marginal conditions it can handle. And again, Dan can kind of echo what he's talked about, corn. In some cases in the Ohio data, Dan, maybe you can recall, they had two or three locations over the last couple of years. And so they've had a few locations mirror ours that soybeans first, and then it kind of dips down. And then the drop in yield potential is not as drastic in that soybean. And then, but corn, you need to take over and start planting. But then if you don't, it's really losing out real quick. Is that what you recall?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of the story we've seen, you know, largely from our colleagues at Ohio State, but some of our stuff here is that, you know, focus on planting soybeans first, but be mindful of, if you're, you know, balancing one crop or the other on your farm, is that usually when you get to about mid-May, right, that yield drop off, so really the loss in yield when we get to later and later planting dates tends to be a little bit more severe for corn than it does soybeans, right? So soybeans will have the highest yield typically with that first planting date, but as those planting dates progress throughout the season and get a little bit later, the soybean yield is going down, but it's often at a slower pace.
Yeah, I typically say loosely that, you know, if we're going mid-May or later, we're losing maybe 0.4 of a bushel per acre per day. I've got some varieties and years that I'm upwards of 0.8 of a bushel per acre per day, but I dare say 0.4, 0.5 is fairly common. And if you put it on a percent basis compared to corn, yeah, corn's loss is much more severe than that.
Yeah. I think looking at corn yields, I think as you get towards later May, a lot of the work that's been done, it's about 1% of yield per day, where it starts, you know, early May, it might be 0.1% per day. So it's just being mindful of, you know, looking at planting soybeans first, but, you know, as that season progresses, right, and you have to maybe make that decision or switch back and forth from one or the other, be mindful of that, hey, the yield loss of corn as it gets later and later tends to be a little bit more severe than the soybeans.
You're listening to Purdue Crop Chat, brought to you by your Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoff organizations. Visit yourcheckoff.org.
I feel like, you know, you mentioned we've cussed and discussed this for quite some time now. By the way, we celebrated recently our 75th episode of this podcast, and we didn't really celebrate it.
He didn't bring a thing.
New plastic hats to wear and splash everywhere.
We'll have to remember that come number 100. We'll see if
golden
we can,
or no? What would that platinum? You gonna give us some platinum?
I don't even know. We'll have to see if we can count that high first. But I mean, I work in radio. You guys work in plants. Like, I don't know that we can get that.
Math is not our forte.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a bean counter. I don't know what you're counting.
but I mean, we've talked about this a lot, and I go back to even when, you know, Bob Nielsen was sitting over in this seat where Dan is now. Yeah. I feel like we were having a very similar conversation to this, and I can't remember where Bob stood, but I feel like it was a similar type conversation of. Yeah, we were kind of still along this road, but it hasn't always been that way, has it, Sean?
Yeah, in terms of just planting dates in between the crops in the Midwest. So, I mean, I grew up farm boy in Illinois, and, you know, what I grew up with was, you know, you plant corn first. That's just the way it is, and as long as you get the beans in by Memorial Day, you're going to do fine. And the mentality was similar in terms of the beans can adapt. The beans can do well. It doesn't matter. But the mindset is changing the fact that they can adapt. They can do well early as well. That's what's different now. It's like, oh, yeah, they're still going to yield well if we plant them late May. No, they're going to yield exceptionally well and handle these conditions better than we've anticipated. So that's where it's changed. And that's probably been the last 8 years in terms of just broad stroke of the brush. Farmers, crop professionals, agronomists to say, yeah, we need to be planting the beans first. That's probably been a good 8 years or so on that. And then the other side, the comments that have been, I know Bob would always say, that's plain date's not the end all be all to make corn yield, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Dan echoes that and has gone beyond in terms of it's the season. What can you do? And you do a great job, Dan, saying it's about establishment. It's about, okay, what can you get it set for success?
Yeah, I think it really comes back to that corn doesn't tolerate issues in terms of emergence, stand law, stand establishment, as well as soybeans do. So that
diva.
Diva.
Right.
Yep. So finesse crop is what I say.
That's not going to catch on. Diva crop.
I'll keep pushing it. It's fine. But, the corn, and just from that aspect, right, of it being not able to tolerate, differences in emergence or timing or stand loss or anything like that, it can, all right? It actually, I was looking at some of this data earlier today. Hybrids over time, you look at corn hybrids and how they respond to plant populations over time, even from like the mid-80s to hybrids that we have today, the range in terms of plant populations that they can tolerate it steadily gets wider and wider over time. So you look at, the genetic tolerance of hybrids today, that they can kind of adjust a lot better than they used to.
So when you say wider, you mean like it goes from 28,000 to 48,000? Yeah. Is that what you mean by
so
wider?
Optimum. So if you look at agronomic optimum plant population, so the population where yield is the highest, that range of numbers in hybrids today is a lot wider than what it was in the past. So
some years you can have a 28,000 yield just as well as a 38, right?
So in many cases with hybrids today, you could go from, I was even looking at some of our data for the last couple of years, and I know Bob and data that he's done, all that plant population work is often very similar. Like even some of our work over the last couple of years where we've had, four different hybrids and all these plant populations, we went from 30,000 plant population to 45,000 plant population, and yield was the same across the board with the different hybrids. Look, it's just showing that, the genetic tolerance is getting better over time, but soybians, a lot of times I've seen 50,000 and versus 200,000 in
you're
not
exactly
much difference.
Right.
So, but again, it's just back to that, how much kind of that poor stand establishment or stand loss or emergence issues can impact that crop in terms of yield. And in corn, it's typically a higher magnitude of yield loss when we have issues. So that's where it comes into really paying attention to those soil conditions and doing everything we can to make sure that seed just doesn't sit in the ground and we have compaction issues and root establishment issues and all these things that can happen when in many cases we get a little bit impatient with planting. We can talk about, we got to plant by this date and we're losing yield by this date and all that. But I do often be a little bit cautious of, because I've had these conversations with farmers where they're like, well, it's May 15th, I got to go. And it's like, well, what are your soil conditions? Oh, it doesn't matter. I've got to go. It's May 15th. You got to, calendar date is important, but the conditions are even more important.
Yeah, if you think about that, right, I feel that same pressure when it gets to the middle of May or something like that. But if it is, you hold off one more day, it's easy for us to say from the armchair, it's easy for us to say we don't have 4,000 or 200 acres or whatever it is staring us in the face. But as you look at that field, one day delay, most cases, half a bushel, 2 bushel difference, right? Mm-hmm. And to get the field in the condition it needs to be.
A couple of things. One, I think you're going about this the wrong way, Dan. We need to teach you some marketing skills here. He keeps calling
it the
finesse crop versus the diva. You need to find a beloved diva, and that's what you need to name it.
Embrace it.
You need to embrace it, but not one that's going to be canceled or has been canceled. It needs to be the Dolly Parton crop. I mean, she's beloved, right? That's where you need to go. If only there was a good quality secondary education institution around here where you could take a marketing class. You need to find something here. But secondly, let's go back to that. You talked about in the past 8 years, you know, finding these differences. Yep. Some of the economics around this have changed too, right?
Sure.
Soybean economics have changed significantly over that time too, to where they've kind of been the big money maker here in recent years.
We joke around 5.7 million acres. There's a reason that we have more soy.
And that's the reason that farmers have been a little bit more focused in on how much better they take care of that.
Yep.
And it's like, no, let's figure out a better way to yield more here.
Yeah. I think what's interesting, you think back to, okay, when we had the ethanol boom, 2008, 2009, corn got up to, golly, what did it get up? $7
Seven,
or more?
$8, yeah.
$8, right? And so, I mean, it's like, let's grow some corn. But then whenever you get to 2020, 21, and you've got nitrogen that's $1 a pound or more, okay, inputs, they're pretty costly on that corn crop. And so it's easy to say, okay, I don't have to put as much in the soy. And, oh, by the way, I have this one change in management practice. It's not a product. It's just a mindset. And when I change and pull the trigger on a planter unit and I make substantial yield advantage and I make substantial profit, that's a no-brainer, right? And I think that's what's really happened.
Yeah. Let's take a time out here on the Purdue Crop Chat. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about planting date and maybe some things that you guys have been hearing here as we get ramped up here for planting season. We'll come back and we'll talk more here on the Purdue Crop Chat on Hoosier Ag Today.
I'm Matthew Chapman, and I farm in Henry County, Indiana. Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council invest checkoff dollars into building demand for corn and soybeans internationally. I've seen this work firsthand, and it's been eye-opening to see the growth in these markets, which also brings dollars back to our farms. Promoting U.S. corn and soybeans and increasing global demand is critical to the success of farmers right here in Indiana.
This message is brought to you by the Indiana Soybean and Corn Checkoffs.
We are back here on the Purdue Crop Chat. Eric Pfeiffer here, Dan Corn Quinn there, Soybean Sean Castile over here. And we're here at the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center. We thank our sponsors, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. And guys, again, we are here just days away from tax day, the middle of April, and planting season should presumably start here soon if Mother Nature cooperates. Just some things that farmers should keep in mind here as they're waiting anxiously, twiddling their thumbs. You know, maybe they've got some final equipment things that they need to, you know, kind of wrap up. Maybe some things that they still need to get purchased here as well, Dan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's... You always think about sitting on your hands waiting to plant, but there's always things that you can check, and recheck, and you'll do all that, and stuff will still go wrong, right? And planting and stuff will still break. But
you just hope you do that earlier so then you have enough time to overcome that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So, you know, being, you know, getting everything set up on your equipment is often always critical, right? And many of the farmers know that. And but yeah, I think, you know, paying attention with the prices we have today, right? They're not what they were a couple of years ago in terms of profitability and, you know, both grain prices but also input costs. Just being mindful of those. Just heard a few reports, right, on, you know, short supply of some 28% in some areas. So paying attention to where that nitrogen fertilizer is, what the supply is at, the retailers, making sure you can get it and get it in a timely fashion, what the costs are. Just, you know, we're in a, you know, kind of a up and down world, I would say, or at this point in time.
Really?
So
elaborate, Dan, would you?
I will leave it at that.
I'm sitting back. He brought that up.
Yep. So a little bit of a, you know, Cedar Point roller coaster we're riding right now. So that just means, hey, just pay attention to things and be mindful of things and making sure, one, you're getting the product that you need, two, watching the prices of those products, or, you know, if you think some things are going to go up, you know, just making sure you have what you need and really paying attention to that. I think it's really critical this year.
I'll put my news hat on for a moment and let you guys, you know, step to the side. I mean, it really is a roller coaster world at the moment. It is hard to say, you know, are prices fluctuating because of supply? Is it because of tariffs? Is it because of supply because of tariffs?
Sure.
There are a number of reasons that things could be fluctuating, and you do just never know. So you need to kind of have a plan in place and then a second plan in place in case that first plan goes awry. And farmers are accustomed to having somewhere around 26 plans in place just in case.
Sure.
So there are a number of reasons to have those plans, especially right now.
Mm-hmm. I think that we always want foundational management, right? We want to start there before we go on. And I think this year is no different, and maybe more so, get back to the basics, get back to the foundation. What is success for you and your farm in terms of, okay, agronomically, profitability, certainly these swings. I dare say that most of us and most of our growers, yeah, we don't like the swings, but we already have the plan in place. Let's stick to that and, okay, bite the bullet if we've got some rains that come in. That's just part of it. But, hey, we know that we need to plant in good conditions, timely. We know we need X amount of nitrogen on the corn side, and we'll be mindful of tar spot and anything else. And, you know, these add-ons, I think it's like, has it been proven? Right, I'm going to kind of dive in. Has it been proven? Do we have a track record for that? If not, that's probably an easier one to just, you know, let's hold off this year.
Yeah, the foundations are foundations for a reason. I know Sean and I deal with this all the time. They're always striving for that next input or, you know, easy button that they can push and get 10 bushel out of it, right?
Yep.
And there's a lot of claims out there, right? And in many cases, we do tons of research trying to find those next nuggets or silver bullets that we say. But in many cases, we have understood from a research standpoint that it's really hard to find those. And it can be very frustrating to try and find those. And the foundations are foundations for a reason, because there's a lot of data and research and just results that back them up, right? And making sure we really hit those foundations, you know, whether it be base fertility and planting conditions and residual herbicides in your weed program. And you think about, you know, scouting and understanding, do we need a fungicide disease control or not, right? A lot of those foundational things are really important, because there's a lot of research that backs them up, and there's also a lot of results out there that show that they perform year in and year out. So just being mindful of that, you know, paying attention to the basics is always critical, because it's going to help set you up for success. And then understanding and asking questions, right, with, you know, everything gives you 3 to 5 bushel today, right? I think I had a conversation with a farmer. He said, walking through a lot of, you know, trade shows and stuff, I should be at 700 bushel corn, because everybody says 3 to 5 bushel at every booth I walk by. So, but just understanding, you know, hey, what are the results out there? Is there data out there? You know, can I try some of it on my farm? It's always great to try it. But especially when you get into tighter economic years, you start to understand sticking to the basics is important. And also you start to understand, hey, is there some things that maybe I can cut out or move away from or skip this year or, you know, stuff like that. So paying attention to that's really critical.
So one thing that comes to my mind, Dan, for you and the corn crop is, okay, manage it foundationally. And what can I do that doesn't change anything, but maybe in terms of input itself in total, but it's like, okay, has an impact on drying cost, or has an impact on the profit or the cost? So to me, one of the easy ones, maybe I'm wrong in this, right, is, okay, plant timely when field conditions are fit and get the starter in there so then you can have a faster dry down, right? And that to me just makes a lot of sense. You can weather the storms quite literally, as well as, okay, have lower moisture content come harvest, so you don't have to worry about high moisture that you got to, you know, burn off, right?
Yeah, I'm big proponent of starter fertilizer. You know, I tend to lean towards more of the off-seed stuff, just so you can get a little bit more. Now that, again, in terms of planting speed, right, you do have to fill up, and it can slow you down a little bit. But, you know, one of the most consistent responses we see, you know, we see yield responses, you know, maybe half the time with starter, but the number one consistent response we see with starter fertilizer is drier grain at harvest. And in many cases, there's been a lot of work that has shown that just that savings and drying cost pays for the starter fertilizer system over time on that planter. But I look to some of these applications where you're not adding an additional application, right? You think about starter fertilizer, whether it be nitrogen, sulfur. We've seen, you know, here and out some responses with zinc based on where you're at and soil tests and stuff like that. But that's something you're going across the field anyway, right? And many of the planters today have the technology and have the equipment to do starter fertilizer anyway. You look at side dress applications, right? You think about ATS, sulfur, right? We've done a lot of work with sulfur, see a lot of benefit in a lot of areas of sulfur. That's something we can just mix in with the tank. We're side dressing anyway at that point in time, right? So you think about kind of logistically and avoiding some of the additional application costs as well. So some of those methods can be helpful.
And provided they've got the benefit, because an easy step is, oh, I'm going out there, spray it V4 anyway. I'm going out there R1, I'm going to just tank mix. Yeah. So it's easy for us to get off this slope and just slide down. It's like, oh, I'll just throw in some of this.
Yep.
Well, again, has to be proven as well.
Yeah.
As you mentioned earlier, you use the word add-ons, and I was going to ask, like, what do you consider add-ons? Like, give me some example of add-ons. I think about, like, a phone plan or something, like old school phone plans, like some add-ons. I used to be a phone salesman, by the way. So, like, you know, I can think of all these add-ons that I used to throw on.
Music ring back tone, right?
Oh, dude, I used to kill on the ringtones. funny story. I had
the Tigers playing in the background.
No, so you know, when you walked into the phone store, you know, each of the phones that were on display, they were live phones. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you could do stuff. I used to put ringtones on each one of them that were kind of embarrassing and terrible. And then I would go and I would program all those phone numbers into my phone. And as my colleagues would go around and show people those phones, I would call them so that the embarrassing ringtones would pop up and ring in front of the other customers.
Hence why he's not in phone sales anymore.
I got out before I got fired is what it was. But yeah, I mean, really, you know, the Macarena and all that stuff. I'd put it all the embarrassing songs on there. But anyway, add-ons. What do you consider to be add-ons, Sean?
Beyond foundation, is that the direction you're going?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've got the seed that you've got to have. Okay. I mean, you've talked about the importance of seed protection.
Sure.
You know,
okay.
So what are the add-ons? What are we talking about?
Yeah,
here?
When you come up to the Dairyland kind of express, what add-ons, toppings do you want to put on your sundae, right? And so within this, I think you've got to have the foundationals in terms of the seed, and then if you're planting timely, conditions mm-hmm. are going to be cooler. So, you know, I typically think of a fungicide seed trim, but you can also at that point add on something that's an insecticide seed treatment. I don't see the benefit in the soybean world, at least in our soybean world, in Indiana, the I states within here. You think about some of the biologicals. Again, that's a whole show we've done 2 or 3, 18 times over. And I just don't see the consistency in those, right? And so I go back to, okay, just because it is an option to add on or throw in the tank, is there the benefit that comes with it? And what is it supposed to do? And do you have that problem? If it's supposed to help your roots grow more prolifically and to acquire phosphorus, but you have soils that are 60 parts per million phosphorus, that's not your problem, right? If you're in low phosphorus soil, okay, maybe that particular product would be a good fit. So I think those are the things that come to my mind.
Mm-hmm. Pesticides, herbicides, insecticides. What about things like, you know, adjuvants and things like that? I mean, those are things that are out there to help and to do the. Are those add-ons? Are those things? How do you measure those types of things?
Oh, yeah, that's where we bring in Tommy and the others and Brian to get into
scientists.
That. I do think that there is a place for adjuvants. There is definitely a place for water conditioners, right? If you have pH that's out of range, these herbicides, these pesticides do not work well. So, I mean, you have to understand the chemistry, or your sales guy or your ag retailer needs to know, okay, yeah, we've got some water that's pretty high, or we need some conditioning here so that we can handle all the hard water that comes with it. So those are in the recipe for a reason. And then you kind of go with the next step. Okay, if I'm trying to get some sort of targeted application with, let's say, a disease that's very localized, but you want to make sure that pesticide, that, you know, fungicide is taken up, you know, an adjuvant does do a good job to make sure that it's taken into the plant. And so again, it's about what's your target and how are you helping it.
So we need to get the weed guys in here is what he's saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm punting.
Okay. Well, we can work on that, right?
I think it sounds like a good idea.
You guys have friends in high places, right? Or low places. There's a song about that.
Well, that's interesting. You said we have friends in high places, and we're talking about the weed guys. Just putting that out there. Just putting that one out there.
Take it as you will.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Willie Nelson's on next.
Final thoughts here, guys, as we wrap up today's Purdue Crop Chat. And again, we're down to it. It's time to get rolling here once Mother Nature says, yeah, let's roll. Mm-hmm. Final thoughts here, Dan.
We're getting there. We're close. But I think my final piece of advice is just
plant those soybeans first.
That's his version of patience.
Patience is
which also means long suffering.
You're getting drastically impatient. Pull the soybean planter out first and go ahead.
Screw up with the soybeans. What you're saying, right? Have all those. You did all the plants and the RTK doesn't work and everything else on the soybeans. I get it.
But I think, you know, another piece of advice is get out of the tractor cab, take a look. Right. Every, you know, you get in the heat of the battle with planting, right? And it can be really crazy and you're running around and you're working hours crazy throughout this time period. But it's just always critical to just get out of the cab and check, right? And that's something, you know, what's the depth? How is it planting? What's the furrow doing? You know, is everything working on my planter as it should, right? Is there one row that's bad or one row that's good, right? So just paying attention to those things, getting out of the cab, checking things is really important, which can often be pretty challenging, right, when you're in the heat of it and jumping from field to field and moving all around, right? But just paying attention to things, paying attention to detail is really critical this time of year.
Yeah, on soy side of things, I go back to we want to be timely. That is coming for us, right, from southern to northern areas. So in the next, you know, 10, 14 days, I think we're there. Weather conditions look promising. Field conditions are what rule the day. Just because it's sunny and 75 doesn't mean our fields are fit. Just because, you know, we can mow doesn't mean that we can plant, right? You know, that's one of the things that, you know, we need to be mindful of. I think as we get into these warmer trends, have the soybeans get planted timely. Again, what seed lots are you using? What seed treatments? Because it is in the thick of it, it's easy to just grab whatever seed and realize, oh, shoot, I should have grabbed the 90% germ lot instead of the 80% germ lot. Or, hey, can I talk to the seed salesman and notice I do have an 85% germ lot. Do you have any extra, like a vigor score on this or a cold germ? So then I know, because those germ scores are based on warm germination, ideal condition. So how does it perform under suboptimal, and can I get that information? I think those are good starting points for us. And then we got to start clean. I'd like to get Tommy or another weed science guy on and say, you know, we got these warmer conditions, burn down, and, you know, good activity for a weed kill. So that's on my mind.
Dan, that's your assignment before our next Purdue Crop Chat. And Sean, orange chicken and walnut shrimp and fortune cookies. White rice is what I'll do.
White rice, okay, sounds good.
Both have your assignments, and we will reconvene here shortly for our next Purdue Crop Chat here at the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center. Are we good? Everybody got their assignments?
Yep.
Okay, very good. Class dismissed. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The Checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.